We are climbing Jacob's ladder. We are climbing Jacob's ladder. We are climbing Jacob's ladder, soldiers of the cross. How we see matters. How we use our eyes and our imaginations matters. When you look at Queen Anne's lace, do you see a beautiful flower or a weed? When you hear the story from Genesis today of Jacob's dreaming about a ladder bridging heaven and earth, what do you see? How do you imagine it? Often our seeing and our imagining is strongly shaped by images and attendant thoughts that have been handed down to us. Maybe how you envision this stairway to heaven comes from your Sunday school storybook and its reproduction of a William Blake illustration of this story. A beautiful winding staircase between earth and heaven, like something out of a Busby Berkeley spectacular from the 1930s. Pristine feminine angels, flawless white skin, gliding up and down an elegant staircase, their movements looking effortless. No stress, no struggle, nothing but gentle light and pastel colors. Beautiful, but so ethereal as to be unreal. A totally spiritualized ladder, resembling nothing of earth. Even Jacob, on the run from cheating his twin brother Esau for a second time, lying there at the foot of the ladder, looks utterly at ease in his golden garment. No sign of the trouble he has gotten into in his family of origin, and no foreshadowing of the many troubles that will come his way from his uncle Laban, for whom he will have to slave for 14 years to gain as wives Laban's daughters, Rachel and Leah. For those of us who follow a Savior whose joining of earth and heaven came through the struggle of the cross, Blake's beautiful stairway to heaven is unreal, lacking the tensile strength that comes with human struggle. But there is an entirely different way to imagine the bridge between earth and heaven that God gave Jacob in his dream. I, for one, need an earthier image, a bridge with greater staying power and strong, earthy reality that's missing in the mere prettiness of Blake's illustration. I need an image that holds in perfect tension, the bitter troubles of earth with heaven's hopes and the divine dream for a better world. On this day after the death of John Lewis, the Edmund Pettus Bridge in Selma, Alabama is for me the most apt, the living ladder of Jacob, where angels carry the cries of injustice up to God, while other angels descend with the Spirit's powerful courage to stir up good trouble and build a more just and loving world. For 25 years, the Edmund Pettus Bridge, named for a Confederate general and Grand Dragon of the Ku Klux Klan, was just a steeply pitched ordinary steel structure over the Alabama River, joining Selma on the west side to highways on the east that led to Alabama's capital city, Montgomery. But on March the 7th, 1965, the first Sunday of Lent and my 12th birthday, that bridge became a living Jacob's Ladder, a place where earth's troubles met heaven's hopes, and the angels of God were engaged in a holy struggle for greater justice. Every rung goes higher, higher, every rung goes higher, higher, every rung goes higher, higher, soldiers of the cross. On that day, March the 7th, 1965, 600 marchers set out to cross that bridge to make their way from Selma to Montgomery, peacefully protesting the lack of voting rights for Black people in Alabama. The voting rolls in Selma were 99% white and only 1% African American, despite the fact that 30% of the population of Selma was non-white. Poll taxes and literacy tests were only two of the mechanisms that were being used to block the way to the polls so that most African Americans could not vote. As the hundreds of marchers climbed the steep pitch of the bridge, it was only when they reached the peak, 100 feet above the water, that they could look down to the east side, where they saw local and state police gathered to block their way to Montgomery. As they caught their first glimpse of the police, one of the marchers, Hosea Williams, a close friend of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King and a member of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, turned to his friend and fellow marcher, John Lewis, chairman of SNCC, the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, and asked John if he knew how to swim. Do you think I'll make a soldier? Do you think I'll make a soldier? Do you think I'll make a soldier? Soldiers of the cross. Despite the danger, Hosea Williams, John Lewis, and their fellow nonviolent marchers continued on their way. They were attacked and brutally beaten. Amelia Boynton was beaten until she was unconscious. John Lewis was clubbed in the head and his skull was fractured. That day became known as Bloody Sunday, and the rungs of these peaceful protesters that they were climbing that day became one of the most important turning points in the ladder that was being built for greater freedom and justice for African Americans. Just 10 days after Bloody Sunday, on March the 17th, the Voting Rights Act of 1965 was introduced in Congress. 5 months and one day later, on August the 6th, 1965, the Feast of Jesus' Transfiguration, President Johnson signed the Voting Rights Act into law. We will never know how many angels ascended to God during those months, carrying the laments and longings of Black people and their allies, nor will we know how many angels made their daily descent to carry to them the courage and strength of God so that the struggle could go on. But what we do know is that a bridge of greater justice and heretofore unimagined hope was built during those months, and that a ladder of love was built that year, which began to undo the hatred and oppression that we are still seeking to overcome in our own day, in the struggle to establish once and for all the magnificence, the meaning, and the matter of Black lives. Sinners, do you love my Jesus? Sinners, do you love my Jesus? Sinners, do you love my Jesus? Soldiers of the cross. 55 years have passed between the summer of 1965 and this strange and trying summer of our own day. And the ladder between Earth's continuing injustices and heaven's hope for justice, truth, and love, that ladder continues to be built. We have to admit that sometimes and all too often, new rungs are added much too slowly to that ladder, and old rungs get broken and need to be repaired. The work is slow because we are all sinners. Like Jacob, we have been promised good things beyond our imagining, but we have not trusted that those good things were abundant enough for all of us to have them. And so we have been selfish, fearfully grabbing more than our fair share, and proving unwilling to welcome into the circle of God's abundance everyone. Everyone of every color and every gender and every national origin. Like Jacob, we have forgotten that the one we fear and from whom we are stealing is our twin sibling. And though we have been graced to sleep at the gate of heaven and have heard God's dream for the world revealed to us over and over through the prophets and through our Savior Jesus Christ, we have awakened day after day and forgotten God's dream. Or we've thought that the dream was too good to be true. And so we have settled into a sinful and selfish dream of our own fearful devising, a narcissistic dream that is not God's dream. And we have become servants and indeed slaves of our own tiny dreams, instead of soldiers of the dream of God, revealed most powerfully in the nonviolent but unyielding love that Christ continued to dream for everyone, wheat and weed alike, even on the cross. If you love him, why not serve him? If you love him, why not serve him? If you love him, why not serve him? Soldiers of the cross. And so, what are we to do? As the spiritual says, if we truly love Jesus, then we must find a way to serve him and his spacious dream, giving up the tenacious hold we maintain on our diminutive and death-dealingly selfish dreams. But how are we to do this? How can we learn better to serve Jesus and his dream of heaven and earth joined in one great family of God, where all are valuable and all are loved and none need live in fear of being ripped up and done away with as useless? Perhaps the parable in today's gospel reading gives us a hint, the parable of the weeds among the wheat. Perhaps what we can learn to see in this parable is that, as the master reminds his slaves, we should not be too quick to judge and seek to pull out what we take to be weeds. To cleave too much to our own understanding is to run the risk of mistaking what is a useful plant for a mere weed. Ralph Waldo Emerson once described a weed as a plant whose virtue has not yet been discovered. The word in our gospel today that is translated as weed is actually a very specific kind of plant, darnel. While growing, it looks almost exactly like wheat, and it is only at its maturity that darnel's grains begin to turn black and can be distinguished from the paler wheat grains. And what is more, though darnel can be poisonous if consumed in too great quantities, in smaller amounts it has virtues that wheat does not possess. Darnel has been used for millennia as an anesthetic and as an intoxicant, adding an extra life-giving kick when it is added to beer and bread. Too much darnel and death results, but just the right amount and it relieves pain and brings joy. Some of our dreams have been too pale, too one-dimensional, like Blake's prettified stairway, or like a monocrop field with nothing but pale, colorless wheat. Perhaps you, like me, were sold an American dream that was pallid and too tightly weeded, where a peaceful, smooth stairway to a bright white heaven was regarded as the only real beauty, and where not rocking the boat or causing any trouble was regarded as the highest good. But where would the spacious freedom of God's dream be if no one were willing to rock the boat and cause some trouble?
Do you want your freedom? Do you want your freedom? Do you want your freedom? Soldiers of the cross.
What would our country be like without the spicy darnel of a John Lewis? If Lewis had been unwilling to risk trouble and have his skull cracked on Bloody Sunday, would there not be even less life and color in the field of our body politic? throughout his service on the City Council of Atlanta in the early 1980s, and then since 1987 in the House of Representatives, he was our Darnell, a man who, out of his own pain, sought to relieve the pain of others, serving as just the right amount of general anesthetic for the sufferings of our fellow citizens. And he was the source of hope for any who knew him well, for his Darnell-like, intoxicating joy was infectious as he danced with his co-workers in the field from both sides of the aisle. Representative Lewis often spoke of the importance of making good trouble. Like the good trouble that Darnell makes in a field, he too believed that you and I have a moral obligation, a mission, and a mandate to speak up, speak out, and get in good trouble. You can do it, he said. You just do it, not just for yourselves, but for generations yet unborn. If you and I are willing to dream God's big dream and be Darnell, spicing up God's field, then together we can, with Jesus' help, build a bridge of freedom from which all God's creatures will be able to rise and shine and give God glory. Rise and shine and give God glory. Rise and shine and give God glory. Rise and shine and give God glory, soldiers of the Lord.